Welcome to the Sixers Mania Podcast. I am your host, Will Coffrin. Joining me, two people this time. Got fucking three people. It's awesome. Mostly because my voice will probably go out by the end of this because I'm somewhat ill. But anyway, Sam, Maltz, thank you both for joining me. Of course, Sam DiGiovanni of Clutch Points. Go on.
Sam. Yeah.
I realized I left that open to both of you. I got it.
First three-person pod in quite some time. It's been a minute.
Yeah, were you even on post Harden trade? I have no idea.
I honestly think the last time I remember doing a three-person one was when, like, it was like the Nets Harden trade.
Right.
Making the case of why the Sixers should have traded for Harden.
Yeah, I meant when's the last time you were on in general? I think it was. I know we did one the day.
Yeah, I think it must have been.
It was literally the last second too, because he got traded later that night.
Yeah,
despite us, and then I did a solo pod at like 3 a.m. Yes. Waiting on the return. But yeah, no, our last three man pod, the same one as what I remember. I mean, we had Feltman and Mitch on
classic
at one point. But anyway, I'm glad to have it back. We'll see how it goes. I know I'm rusty at hosting these. But anyway, Malt, how you doing? Gotta get your input.
Of course. Doing well. Can't complain. I mean, the Sixers got the win last night, which is a nice one to see. But yeah, feeling all right about the Sixers and my confidence. You know, it always wavers with this team. I feel like it just depends on Embiid's health, as we all know. But
yeah, of course, they're dog shit without him. And they did win against the Magic. So that was, I guess, the biggest takeaway. We'll talk about the game now, I guess. But and as well as the Heat game a little bit, because we're both without Embiid. Yeah. I'll start on the Sixers game, as if I was going to talk about something else. I'm pulling it up. My bad. I don't know. Like, it was just a very normal. Like, I feel like other teams have this. There's a few rotation things I want to mention later. But I don't know. Like, Oubre had a terrible box score, but I actually thought he looked amazing.
It was my one.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll let you go, yeah. Sam. You're the beat reporter.
Right, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I had nothing. I was really trying to figure out what big picture I want, but it was really
Kelly made a lot of those great plays. Him and Jalen Suggs. He had a lot of like off ball scores, so he ended up shooting like super good, even though he didn't like create a lot of his looks. But yeah, that was probably one of Kelly's better games. Obviously, very nice bounce back game for Maxey, who responded really well too. I was really interested to see how he was going to do against a very tough Orlando defense that has a lot of great, you know, guards who can defend, but also like big bodies behind them. And did pretty well. Shot, I think, 9 for 18, 50%. Did a good job. You know, the Sixers kind of opened stuff up for him by letting him cook in space or using a shooter to screen for him, to kind of give him that space to work. And he had some ridiculous finishes. Tobias Melton provides some also nice scoring. So I think, you know, it's kind of obviously everything revolves around Embiid, and if Embiid's hurt, there's no shot at the title. But I think it is important to, like, get these types of wins with Joel out to show that the rest of the team can kind of carry the weight, and especially against, you know, an offensively challenged but still pretty good Magic team. Like, that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, for sure. They're highly ranked, and well, standings wise, I do think they've cooled off a little bit since then, but it's a nice win to get, especially because the Sixers used to struggle in Orlando when the Magic were terrible and the Sixers would have Embiid. So that was good to see, even though I just want to say, I guess, even though Tobias's numbers were good, I still think he sucked. But Maltz, any further takeaways?
No, nothing on Tobias. I don't want to get into Toby, even though, like you said,
he will be talked about as he usually is.
As he is on every podcast, and we start off negative, which, I mean, rightfully so. But to go into Kelly Oubre real quick, which, I mean, he really is a bright spot. It's nice to have a guy like that, which I feel like the Sixers have never had outside of course, Maxey and Embiid, but just in previous years, especially a guy like off the bench who obviously kind of fluctuates depending on the starting lineup that night. But just a quality score off the dribble, which we rarely have. It's nice to have a guy like Oubre just to kind of provide some scoring, which, I mean, he really is a pure scorer. I was impressed. I mean, I've never watched Kelly Oubre that close, but just the way he can score, even in the paint outside of his shooting from three, which has been up this season, it feels like. It's nice to have a guy like that can provide, you know, a consistent 18, 20 points if he gets a starting role or a lot of minutes like he has been.
Yeah, well, even yesterday in the start, he only had 4 points, but it was one of those where he was just like, he was everywhere defensively, he was shooting quickly. And I was like, I looked at the box score, I was like, how does he only have, like, I felt like he was so good. But
and
yes,
that Christmas Day game, I mean, he stepped up big time, which oh, for we sure. obviously lost. I mean, Maxey shot Brick City, but it happens, and Oubre played well.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go straight to these weren't huge games, obviously, so we don't have to go like super in-depth. They don't really show the title contendingness of this team. But the Miami game, I thought it was actually a positive loss in a way, because it was away versus a good team, even if they were missing Jimmy. We were, of course, missing Embiid, so we were still at the bigger loss. But it was promising because Maxey was terrible, and it was a close game, and the other guys really did step up, like Oubre. So I thought that was pretty nice. But though it was infuriating, Jaime Jaquez, just
superstar.
He's just, good.
He's good. He's not that good.
He's not that good. That was his best game of the season.
Well, I think a lot of it was poor Sixers defense too. I don't think that was necessarily schematically. It was not. I mean, I think it's more so the guys than the coaches. I don't know if that's a hot take, because it seems like the same issues that we had under Doc. I would say under Brett too, but it's been a while. A lot of the roster turnover since Brett Brown. It seems like they do the same dumb shit, like Tobias specifically, in terms of like not being able to defend, but Morris is definitely guilty of it as well. So I don't know. I think it's just players that are making poor decisions, and this is one game, but I don't know. Yeah. We'll go with Sam, former, used to write about the Heat. So this is really like your baby. What were your thoughts on the Heat game?
I mean, it was really like Vaughn said, Brick City for Maxey. And I mean, he got his shots. He stayed with it, and it was just like he had plenty of wide open ones and free throws that he couldn't hit, so it was just clearly like not his night.
It was his worst game in years, I think, honestly. Yeah, like, for sure. He was so destructive that game.
I think I wrote in one of my post game stories, I'm pretty sure this is the stat, it was one of like 29, I think, career games where he's taken 20 field goals, and his four field goals that he made were the lowest. The next lowest was
I would think
it was not his night at all. It happened, and I mean, it's weird, like, to compliment, like, the, you know, star guard for, like, continuing to shoot through his slump. It's that classic Kobe. I just learned the other day, it was actually a Kobe quote, not Deion Waiters' original quote of, I'd rather go 0 for 30 than 0 for 9, but
I'm attributing it to Deion Waiters.
The way that Maxey is, like, kind of come up as, like, a first or just a rotation guy, but now being the star, like, he does still kind of, he just seems like a selfless guy / player, that he does need to kind of get into this mentality of like continuing to shoot. And Embiid and Nurse say this like all the time. So yeah, rough game for him. Kelly obviously stepped up big time with the scoring. Mo Bamba, pretty good scoring night. I think he made all three of his threes.
He was insane that game. And I want to talk about Bamba a little bit more, so I'm gonna hold off.
Yeah, no, personally on that. Probably on the Heat game, but yeah.
Yeah, I know it was a while ago, so I don't know, Malta, anything to add there? Or, I mean,
no, I do like Sam's point though about Embiid, and not only like, of course, on the court, we know what Joel Embiid brings, but I mean, off the court and just kind of his presence with really Maxey and his growth, just you know, kind of instilling confidence in him is huge. And I think, I mean, you see it all the time. You see the quotes that Sam puts out and the other writers, and it's true though, it is. And I mean, I love that Embiid is kind of, you know, really telling Maxey to shoot the ball and just kind of giving him the confidence that he needs, because he is a young player, and it can be hard when you have a guy that's an MVP on your team and, you know, you want to defer to him sometimes, but he's like, shoot the ball, be you. We know how good you can be when you're confident in shooting and just kind of, you know, taking those attempts. And sure, the Heat game, he missed a lot of shots and he still attempted them. But I think to have Embiid out there, not only physically, but even mentally in his head is huge.
Yeah. And I don't know if I've said it here or wherever I write, I talk to Sixers fans constantly, so I'm kind of, I end up repeating myself probably, but credit to Embiid and as well as Maxey, of course. You talked about basically as a teammate encouraging him to shoot, and that was something when Ben was here, it kind of painted Embiid as a bad teammate. I'm not saying I thought that, but a lot of people, I think a lot more people thought he was being a bad teammate, was kind of being a dickhead towards Ben when he wanted everyone to shoot and wasn't like publicly calling him out, like shoot. And he's doing that with Maxey, and meanwhile it made Maxey a way better player. So of course credit to Maxey for taking that growth, but it really shows that like Embiid was just dealt a difficult teammate, in my opinion. So you know, credit to both of them. So the part I want to talk about that relates to these two games, more big picture stuff, because the actual rotations are somewhat impacted by this, even if we're missing Embiid. So minor note, I don't really hate anyone on this team, so maybe if I see more, besides Tobias, if I see more negative towards some people, sorry, if I see more, like, it's because I feel like there's not that hate guy I hated. Every year, there's always been a few. This team, I feel like, is fairly good. Even Beverly, who gets on my nerves sometimes, and Jaden Springer, like, they're not the worst. But with that being said, I'm saying this because Marcus Morris, I thought I was going to hate. And I actually, like, am kind of fine with him right now. I don't know. It might be results over process because he's making a lot of tough shots, and he's just, his percentages are absurd. I still wouldn't play him over Covington. So I want to get both of your guys' thoughts on that. We'll start with Sam. But I don't know. What do you think about Morris versus Covington, as well as just how Morris has been as of late? Because it was a lot different than a couple of weeks ago.
I think you put it well that it is results over process. Like, the watching him, he slows the ball down a lot, and defensively he is very, like, hit or miss, and mostly miss in my opinion. But I mean, listen, when a guy is shooting like that, I think it's helpful, and especially because with Embiid out and the Sixers kind of need some shot creation, I think his value is much more apparent, especially the game against the Magic. He was one of the shooters that the Sixers were using as a screen for Maxey. When he got the ball back, he could either fire or kind of drive and mosey into the mid-range and, you know, put up a shot off the bounce, which is, again, super valuable with no Embiid. But with Embiid, I definitely think Covington is the better fit in the normal rotation, like the way that he creates turnovers on defense. And, you know, Morris is obviously a natural, probably a better shooter than Covington, but Covington is still a fine shooter. The Morris experience has been better than I thought, for sure. But I still think that if you, you know, between him and Covington, I would lean Covington when fully healthy, but also Embiid's out tomorrow. I would, you know, they have another game on Saturday, so we'll see if there's a chance he comes back for the end of the road trip. I kind of doubt that, but yeah, Morris has been fine so far, but a lot of that, I think, is hinged on the fact that he's just making a lot of his shots.
Yeah, and I want to, before we get to Maltz, I do want to talk about real quick, just, you know, since your report on them, has Nurse said anything in regards to Covington? Like, I think he was injured, but it just seems like Covington's kind of out of the rotation despite the fact he was playing well, and I don't know, like, he's available to play, but he's not playing, so I don't know. Has Nurse said anything about that specifically?
Not really. Nurse has talked about his rotation, about how there's so many guys to fit, and how he'd made it a point a while ago to say it's very hard to go past 10 guys, so I would imagine that he is trying to, like, there was that one game where he ran like a 9-man rotation, but switched out Bamba and Paul Reed, so I'm counting that as, like, because they play the same position, right? And Covington wasn't one of the guys, so I'm not sure how. No one's asked him about Covington specifically, at least not that I've known. Maybe he's been.
Yeah, it's also a tough question. Like, you're not going to be like, "Hey, Marcus Morris can't move."
Specifically about one guy who's not, like, a, you know, bona fide star or, like, starter on the team. But
well, it's very clearly that it's one of those two.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, to my knowledge, nothing specific he said about Covington. It's just, you know, he's always complimentary about it. General coach speak, complimentary about his players. Says that he has a lot of guys he's trying to fit in and out, and whenever he's asked about how Covington played in a certain game, he's always complimentary of him.
He says the right thing, it just doesn't really show it. I don't know. Yeah. It's been really frustrating for me, especially because Covington, I feel like, is very disruptive defensively.
Absolutely. He's always been, and this season has been one of his very best.
Yeah, so it's been frustrating to see. He's exceeded my expectations of what he was, because I knew he was worse. Obviously, I knew he was out of the rotation in L.A., and I knew he wasn't the same guy that he was in Philly, but he's actually, in a lot of ways, better, just less athletic and maybe not as good of a shooter as he used to be. But anyway, Maltz, Morris, or Covington?
I would take Rocco for sure, but I feel like even before, like, once we made that trade, wasn't Covington getting more minutes than Morris to start?
Yeah, to start.
He was starting this season, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that, not that it means everything, but I mean, I would
Morris
agree.
I think Morris was, like, feuding with the Clippers, which is part of the reason why.
Yeah,
but it was on the Sixers when we first got him here. Morris wasn't playing, and Covington was.
Right.
I think Covington deserves more minutes for sure than what he's been given recently. I think for sure. I mean, that's definitely a big piece. And on top of that, defensively, versatility is huge. I mean, Covington come playoff time is going to be a more important piece off the bench than Morris, in my opinion.
Especially because Morris, I feel like, has a more tradable salary. I know that's not the route you're going, but I feel like it's more likely that Morris isn't on this team than Covington. Maybe I'm wrong.
But, well, maybe that's why they're showcasing him a little bit.
Morris is the type of guy.
I don't buy that.
Morris is the type of guy that'll have like a Marcus Morris playoff game, but through an entire series, you would want Covington steadier, like
yes, consistent production.
But yeah. I agree that Morris's salary is very, and there's been a lot of like not legitimate like trade talk, just kind of pondering like, hey, are they playing him a lot to show the team that trades for him that he's still capable? Like obviously, whatever trade he's involved in is not. It's solely based on the salary that he makes, which is like
that was kind of my point. Was like you're not right. Team's going to be like sick. We got Marcus Morris for the stretch right. run. Like it's going to be we traded a better player.
But I think if he's not playing at all, I mean, I guess if he's just a complete throw in, then fine. But I mean, if he's not playing,
I think
at
he would
all,
just be a complete. I think he's literally just the salary because I think it just the way trades work in the NBA. I'm not like mansplaining trades, but I'm just saying you know the way it works is like. If you're trading Morris, like for the Sixers, they're going to be looking to upgrade. Or like, I don't think there's a backup point guard that makes like $18 million and is expiring. So I don't know. Maybe if there's a rare positional swap that they can do right there. But like, you're going to be trading. The reason you're trading Morris is because he's a salary that's expiring. So a team that doesn't want Morris can be like, oh, we'll free up cap space at the end of the year, and we got this pick for trading this guy. Like if they trade him for, it's not going to happen. But Lowry, Markkanen, like. They fit salaries. The Jazz could be like, all right, sick. We just ditched that guy and got a ton of picks. I don't know. Right. So it just seems
he's gonna be a buyout guy and find his way to like the Lakers or something at some point.
Yeah. That being said, and we'll get to trade talk later. I'm not sure. I think the Sixers are gonna do anything, or B, I want them to do anything. I'm not quite sure yet. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's been an interesting sort of battle on how that's gone away. I wonder how it's gonna change once Morris stops hitting shots at an instant state or. Rate that's not sustainable, but I don't hate Morris, even though I don't love the process of it. It's just like he's kind of just like if Mike Scott was a better shooter when Mike Scott was a quarter, but he's got a little bit more juice to him than Scott did towards the end. So another rotation battle I want to talk about, and I'll go to Maltz first on this one, but been a little Mo Bamba versus Paul Reed in my mind. I don't know how you've been feeling. Obviously, against the Magic, Paul Reed had a way better game. Against the Heat, Mo Bamba had a way better game. But it does seem like Nurse is a little bit more ready to go to Bamba at this current rate. Maybe they start playing together once Embiid comes back. I don't really know. But I feel like Bamba's been great. What have you seen, Malt?
I was gonna say I would love to see them in the same. Lineup. I mean, Paul Reed definitely can't play the four, right? I mean, he can, and Bamba could shoot. So that would be an interesting lineup, but I'm still taking Paul Reed over Bamba. Like, if we had to pick a rotation right now, you know, going into the playoffs, whatever, I'll take Paul Reed just because of his versatility. And I like his experience more.
Even though he's less experienced, but yes.
I trust Paul Reed in the system and kind of just being here.
Yeah, he's been here longer.
So I would take Paul Reed over Mo Bamba.
He seems to know his role a little bit better and in general has been like he played very well against the Magic. I do think me personally, I don't want to give Glenn Rivers credit, but for whatever reason, I feel like Paul Reed looked better under Doc, reined in. I don't know. And I do like seeing the weird shit that he does. Personally, I don't know if either of you, and we'll get to you, Sam, in a second. I'm not going to go on too long. I don't know if you guys have noticed whenever Paul Reed will get the ball down low, he like spins, does a pump fake, the guy doesn't bite, but then he just shoots it anyway instead of passing out to the guy that's wide open in the corner, and it infuriates me every time. But yeah. I don't know if you've noticed that, but anyway, Sam, what are your thoughts on the Bamba?
I think the thing about Bamba versus B-ball Paul is that Mo lacks severely in the amount of times he's dribbled between his legs a bunch and assisted Max. The funny thing when B-ball Paul gets into his like random shit, it's so much fun to watch. But obviously, like on a team looking to make some serious, you know, shots at a title, I think for now at least, like I don't think Paul Reed's done anything to like lose his spot as the backup. I do kind of get that Mo is more of like a, you know, standard like center in terms of size, and obviously the shooting is atypical in basketball history, but not so much nowadays. But I do think with Reed's versatility and his impact on the boards on defense, like he's the guy to go to now. But I will say though, the obviously not just with how he played against the Heat. He had a nice first opening stint against the Magic yesterday, his former team. He was really excited to see a lot of his friends there in Orlando, but I do think for now it should be Reed, although Bamba has impressed me more. I was very concerned during this preseason. I was like, oh wow, no wonder they got him in a month, but he's been coming along for sure. And I think it's, you know, there could definitely be a situation where it's matchup dependent at the backup five spot. But I would say that Reed still has the edge for now.
Yeah, I would still agree overall. I don't think I gave my official standpoint, but it was one of those things where it's a lot closer than I would have anticipated a couple of weeks ago. Even though a couple of weeks ago when Reed was really struggling, I was like, why doesn't like Bamba ever get a shot? Because it just, I don't know. I think he's a solid player. It's obviously not going to be earth shattering. But the other thing I think it opens up to, and I don't have any trades set up, but I actually think Paul Reed might be an intriguing trade piece for some teams. I know it's like a cheap backup center, so that's not like exactly what every team's looking for. Not a lot of teams can technically use him, but I think he probably could get more minutes on some teams that don't have Joel Embiid as their starter. I don't know. I think it would be interesting to explore trades because I would feel confident in Bamba. And I think Reed might has value. He's also one of the only Sixers on the roster for multiple years in terms of contract. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting one, but like I said, I don't really know what the market is for that. So
kind of nice to have the options too.
Trade.
Yeah. What were you saying, Sam? I heard multiple.
That he's more of a sweetener in a trade. It's not like, hey, this.
Oh
like,
yeah, it won't be the Paul. Yeah,
the Jazz obviously signed him to that offer, but I don't think anyone's going to go like, hey, let's acquire it. It's like if the Sixers are going for example, OG and Anobi, and Toronto is interested, I don't think they're going to say no to include.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Masai will say no if we offer them Joel Embiid, to be honest.
We'll just say. I don't expect Masai to trade anyone to Philly unless he thinks they're going to sabotage.
I don't think he's trading them anywhere. They're just going to expire. Sure. And then Masai's just going to keep collecting checks. And it's the biggest heist since 2019. The guy sat around, hasn't done shit. Anyway,
I said it on this podcast. He owes his success to the Knicks being dumbasses twice.
Yeah. he owes it to a lot of other people, to be honest. Like, he owes it,
and he won a championship, yada yada. Who cares? Let's hit. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I'm just saying, like the Spurs organization, Clay Thompson's Achilles,
Zaza Pachulia.
Yeah, like Zaza Pachulia. A lot of Warriors. Like, thank the Warriors. Thank the Spurs. Thank the whatever.
A lot of thank you cards after that championship.
Yeah. okay. Do we want to do trades or do we want to talk about the Pistons first? Because honestly, like, I'm enjoying
the Pistons. Give me the Pistons.
Okay, it's the Pistons.
Give me the Pistons. Right now Celtics.
Oh, let's go Pistons. Come on.
Yeah, so we don't know the result of this.
They're starting Kevin Knox.
Oh my God, they're tanking again. How can you tank even more? Start Kevin Knox.
My birthday neighbor. He was born one day before me. Let's fucking
Oh my
go.
God.
That's awesome. All right. Let's see. We don't know the result, of course, yet. They're playing tonight, literally, as this podcast is going. They haven't tipped off yet. But I just want to talk about them because it's interesting, the parallels between them and the Sixers. Of course, they just broke the Sixers' streak of the, what is it, 27 net losses in a row now? They broke the Sixers of 26.
Single season. I think it's bullshit that the real record is 28 over two seasons. It should be single season. Right. But I also think they're well on the way to getting the Pistons are.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a big game against the, Toronto is their next.
Toronto's the last one of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's their most winnable one. Anyway. But yes, they broke the single season losing streak. And the weird thing is this Pistons team has talent in my mind is kind of what I wanted to talk about. I will, of course, always try to bring it back to fucking Adam Silver having to step in for the Sixers and ruining our franchise while the Pistons can, you know, do their thing and no one cares. And granted, like I said, the Pistons actually have talent and all these other things. But it's just funny that the team that Adam Silver had to step in for is not as bad as this fucking Pistons team by the losing streak standard. So, Sam, I'll let you go on the Pistons first and then Walt.
What's so jarring about what the Pistons are doing is that they are doing this years into the rebuild and at the point where you should be taking off as a team.
Also a terrible draft, just as a quick aside. Like they weren't doing this the Wemby year. They're doing it the year after Wemby.
Right, and not even that. Like they have drafted in the top 10 four times in each of the last 4 years, and they've had multiple first-round picks in three of those drafts. The only time they didn't was when they had the number one overall pick. So this team has spent their years like accumulating assets and being bad. And I agree they have talent. It's just shocking the amount of which none of it works. And the lack of spacing is key. I also think it's just like the number one engine on offense is Cade, who is, you know, being held back by the context of his team, but also not uplifting it at a level you would hope a number one pick can. Like, his deficiencies as far as like his inability to finish and his high amount of turnovers, like, I think really holds back. Like, even, you know, when the Pistons are rolling, it's tough to envision them rolling because Cade, as good as he is still kind of, you know, he had obviously the injury last year, but it's still kind of been disappointing start to his career so far. And, you know, this is a team, again, the Sixers, the process Sixers, were intentionally losing, and they did it with a purpose, and they, you know, obviously weren't shy about it. But this Pistons team, you know, at least publicly, is all about, we're trying to win, we're trying to, you know, yada yada. So I think that is part of the reason why the league isn't stepping in, and also because the Sixers set a precedent that teams have followed. So it, you know, they punished the first team to do that.
I'm not saying the league should step in, by the way. I just think it's fucking bullshit.
Right. I think, but that's why, like, that precedent was there for them. And I mean, listen, if they go on a losing streak, like, who knows? What I feel like it was like February that the league decided to intervene with the Sixers.
Yeah, it was around then. I know, so it was
maybe we'll see if later in the season the league decides to do something. I don't expect them to. But yeah.
Oh, I don't think
40 straight. They're going to lose 40 straight.
Yeah.
They're not going to lose that much. Honestly, in my heart of heart, I think the Wizards are actually worse than them. I don't know if that's a super hot take, but I look at the talent on the Pistons team and I just think.
Yeah, but the Pistons have Alec Burks.
Right. They do have Alec Burks. That is a great point, Maltz, that they, my fucking.
You're our guy, nemesis.
Alec Burks. We got some good feedback on that list. People seem to enjoy it. So maybe there will be more lists in the future. But yes, Maltz, these Pistons, I don't know. What do you think? You were a big Ja guy back in the day, but how does the Wiseman.
Listen, big fella. No, here's the problem, though. Here's the real problem is that they're not playing Joe Harris. That's I figured out the
Harris
real
stinks
issue.
Now. If they were playing him, they would lose.
What?
He does kind of suck.
I'm just kidding.
Could be a future Sixer.
He has a good guy to take his contract on because, like, oh, he provides spacing for Cade and Ivy and whoever, but he actually is cooked.
No, yeah, and who knows how much of a fluke it was, but yeah, like, Moss, well, just like, as because you're Sam's not a Sixers fan, spoiler, you were, so like, I don't know, do you like get any flashbacks, any PTSD? I mean, I actually enjoyed those years, but like, they're, like I said, they have talent, so it's a little
Yeah, I feel bad for them because they're not intentionally like trying to lose.
They played that Nets game like it was game 7.
So I'm saying, like, we went in going like, we want to lose, like, we want a high draft pick. Like, that was the mission. That, like, when you lost, you were cheering. You're cool. Yeah. Higher
Our
draft
best player
pick
was Robert
awesome.
Covington,
like,
not Kate Cunningham.
Anyway. I mean, so it was, yeah, it was different. Now you have a number one pick on your team that's expected. I mean, he dropped 41 in their previous game. So he obviously a very good player, Kate Cunningham. They have talent. I feel terrible for Pistons fans. Luckily, at least the Lions are decent in Detroit, but my God. And I know they have that promotion with their free wings.
Yeah, poor wings. So wings stopped raking it in from no one getting free wings.
Although one time they do win, though, they're going to get flooded. They're going to business that one night.
They will just run out of wings. The chicken prices will be skyrocketing across the nation.
They're lucky they don't up it like the Sixers do. I mean, I guess chicken nuggets are different than wings, but it's not like it's for an 8 count of wings.
But yeah, no, I feel terrible for Pistons fans. And I think the worst part is that James Wiseman, or as Zala would say, Weissman, is terrible.
he is pretty bad.
Their shit with Knox and Bagley too just made no sense.
Horrible.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but like before the draft, I would have liked a lot of these guys, as evident by Killian Hayes, James Wiseman. I like Durin, and Durin's actually good. But like Bagley, I like too. Like it's a lot of guys I did like.
Their rookies are good too. Sasser and Azar Thompson. They killed this draft, and they plunged them into an awful situation. Thompson's defense is ridiculous to watch, especially the games he had against the one game. In Detroit, he looked really, really good.
Yeah, they definitely hit on that pick, I would think.
100%. I mean, it was after they found in the mid-20s, and he's been really solid.
Right, and for some reason, they went away from him.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. Imani is like the third highest paid coach in the league.
Yes.
And it seems to be, it sounds like it was,
we just didn't
like
want to go to Detroit.
It was like, oh, I was going to step away, but here's a situation I can't say no to. And I mean, he's getting paid like $78 million or something like that. I mean, makes sense, but
I mean, I know the team is more talented than we, you know, than their record, but is it on coaching? Is, I guess, part of it is on coaching?
What would it's
you
definitely say part
of it. I think some of it is, and I understand Killian playing, not because I'm a big Killian Hayes guy, but because I'm truly not. I just was pre-draft. Killian Hayes does not turn the ball over pretty much at all, and I think coaches are boomers when it comes to that, and I think Sasser being a rookie is just going to be hard to break through, but they need shooting around Cade, and Ivy doesn't do that, and I mean, honestly, Killian doesn't either, but Killian's more stable.
Boyan and who else?
Right. And I don't know. It's just such a clunky fit, and that's what I want to talk about. Like, it's actually, in some ways, Pistons fans should be, I guess, sort of happy because they do have a collection of talent, and I do think they can get value for some of their guys. Because honestly, like, if you're going to tank, you might as well have a bunch of guys that don't fit together so that you can trade them off and then get pieces that actually fit and, like, actually try building the team in one way. But it is frustrating when you have a guy like Cade Cunningham. The Sixers never really had that number one pick kind of guy come in and just be good, but losing. But that's what the Pistons fans are currently going through. And I think Ivy should probably be traded. I think he's just going to lose value. I don't see how he's ever going to regain value. That's not to say that he's bad. I actually think he'd be an intriguing trade piece, even if the Sixers wanted to. I mean, I doubt it because that would be too rich for a young guy. But I don't know. Like, Ivy's very talented. He and Cade are just a terrible backcourt. And that's also because I'm banking on Asor, who I think is a really nice piece. I think he's their second most promising piece. And I cannot imagine a world in which Cade, Azor, and Jaden Ivey are playing winning basketball on the same team. So, I don't know.
That is fair. It's a tough situation because, I mean, they're going to have to, you know, unless they have the best spacing ever or the most creative coaching, it's going to be tough to make those three fit. But
do they have any veterans that, I guess, Bogdanovich that actually play minutes? Like, that's pretty much it, right?
Burks, yeah.
Burks, okay. And Billy's favorite. Okay, Burks, got it. Pretty much it though, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and Burks single-handedly cost them against the whatever. Anyway, as he always does, you know, fuck Burks. But also, speaking to the point of shooting, they have Jaylen Duren too, who is one of the better players, and he's not a shooter. So they got to do some roster surgery. It's just a team that doesn't clearly there that clearly doesn't fit together. But I wanna go on one more thing. So you know, I wanna have a discussion about Cade Cunningham. Kyle, turn the TikTok cameras on. That's a Bill Simmons joke. Anyway, are we sure Cade Cunningham's good, though? Like, I did say he is good, and I think that. However, I looked at his basketball reference, and stats aren't everything, but it's not as good as
They're
I
bad.
Think.
And rough,
it, like, I'm like, is there some Michael Carter-Williams here? Obviously, he's having a better year. He's not. He's way better than Michael Carter-Williams. But it's like, not very, like, I thought he was more efficient just eye test when I watch him, and he's not really a three shooter. Like, he kind of gets the line. He's a good passer, but he averages 3.9 turnovers to his 7 assists. Granted, spacing's pretty rough. Are we, like, I don't know, what are we feeling on Cade? What's the consensus? I'll go with you, Sam, first.
He's definitely not, I mean, I feel like this is the baseline expectation for a number one overall pick. They have the potential to be the best guy on a championship team, or at least one of the top two. It's clear that Cade is not that. For as much as, like, the context of not having space, like, there's a certain level of, like, if you're good enough, you'll be able to make it work. Or at least you yourself will be able to, like, you know, do enough to overcome your inefficiencies. I think I've heard this on other podcasts, I forget which one, but I think the best outlook for Cade is being like a Lonzo type of role player where you can do a few different things, but you're relying on, like, other people to, like, be the main sources of offense, and you're more
still
of, like,
a rough connector. Comparison.
It's still tough for, I mean, it's not, I mean, look, Lonzo.
I like Lonzo a lot, but a number one pick that you're building
right.
a franchise.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to live up to that hype, but there's definitely a context where he can be a very good and productive player. It's just probably not going to be as one of the best guys on the team.
Yeah, Maltz, what are your thoughts on
Cade?
I agree. And
I
mean, he has been going off recently, to be fair.
I wasn't gonna stats, yeah. He's had some 40-point games recently, but...
But his, like, career stats, and granted, he barely played last year. First year was a rookie, and this year he's playing better than those years. But still, his career stats are like, not as good as I, like, eye test, I guess. Like, eye test
I mean,
slightly better.
Going into your third year, I feel like you really should start to truly develop and be, like, one of the best, not best players in the league, but, you know, really crack that top spot or be in the mix. I mean, you're number one. Yeah. You're number one pick for a reason. So, yeah, I agree with Sam. Is he going to live up to that hype? most likely no. Part of it is the team around him blows. I know there's talent, quote unquote, and there's a lot of young guys that we see potential in. But
I think it's mostly the shooting specifically.
I mean, but even look at like Devin Booker, for example. Like he was around some ass teams, but he eventually, like, it was clear that he was, you know, a really good player in the making, and he found a way to develop in that context. Now, obviously, that's like an outlier case, especially because he wasn't a top 10 pick, but like
that's what I was going to mention.
Talent where you can prove it despite the team around you.
Yeah. But I agree. I think it's also too early to rule him out and say, hey, he can't be a very, very, very good player in the league. Maybe not for top five, but I mean, he has the potential to be a top 15 player. I think he could definitely crack that at some point. I haven't seen it. Ooh, I haven't seen it.
Lofty.
I'm just saying. Lofty, man.
It is.
In fairness, though, like, if I said Tyrese Haliburton was going to be a top 10 player a year ago, like, that would have been pretty wild, too. Yeah. I don't know.
It's hard to look at it now.
But Haliburton at least has always been productive on an NBA court.
It's kind of productive in the same way. It's a better score.
Again, a part of it is like, this is such a ridiculously bad team that it's like, you know, his flaws are going to be more exposed. So maybe if the Pistons are able to rework it, or if they, you know, show mercy and send him somewhere else, more of his strengths will be able to pop.
If they were like 15-13 now, or whatever, like at the 500 record, like people would look at Cade differently, even with the stats.
Well, I mean, a lot of things would have to be different for them to have that record. And I think the number one thing is he would have to be better. Like, I think part of the reason they're so bad is that they don't have a reliable offensive engine because Cade hasn't been as good as advertised. And again, there's totally the argument of the spacing around him sucks. There are a lot of other young guys around him that don't know how to create. So he has a lot to deal with, but there should just be more solid production from a top pick. And that's why I kind of believe that he's not going to be able to be a true star and will top out as like a high level role player, which is it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think a high level role player might be a low. I was the guy who brought the question. I still think that might be a low. I think he's,
I mean, would you say that's what Lonzo Ball is? Like, that's a pretty good,
I think he's better than Ball because he's a better scorer.
Do you think Cade's better than Lonzo right now?
I might be better than Lonzo right now because he can't walk. But
actually reporting.
But you know what I meant, like healthy Lonzo at the start of the.
No, I know what you're saying. I think he's a better scorer. I mean, Lonzo. Lonzo's always an interesting question because it's like, it's kind of like the Derek White thing, just like a.
Best role player of all time.
What, like, yeah, like, is he an all, like, is what's more valuable, like a lower tier star or like the best role player? So it's an interesting thing. And I don't think Cade's the mold of what I don't think he's just going to be there in the background. Like if Cade was on the Sixers, I think he would make himself very apparent on the team, you know, for instance.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, he's playing with anyone but Joel Embiid. That's just how good a guy like Joel is.
Right. Anyway, you mentioned rosters and that they might need some roster reconstruction. Well, boy, do I have a guy for you. Near all-star Tobias Harris. Apparently they have interest in him.
It's so funny that he's been actually rolling once they started.
All right, I guess we'll take Cade for it. Fine.
Right.
Alec Burks coming back? Is he going to take 5 months to get there again?
Yes, he and Glenn Robinson will go there just for vibes, too.
Oh my God.
They're actually going to race. Glenn Robinson from China or wherever he's playing. And then that's right. And but anyway, so the interesting thing about, so the Pistons have been rumored for Tobias Harris, which is probably the reason why they are losing 29 straight or whatever the fuck that they're going to be on to. I don't know why the hell they would want Tobias, especially when you look at the salaries. And this is what I was getting to next. Like, I can understand the standpoint of like, if they're like, hey, he's expiring, but we just need someone, we need like an adult here. And everyone seems to like Tobias. So let's bring him in. But if you get rid of, or if you're getting Tobias Harris, you have to match his salary. The only guys they have that make money are Bojan Bogdanović and Joe Harris. And I think Bogdanović is straight up better. I would love Bogdanović on this team. So I don't know if it would be, once again, if this is how they view it, where if they want to give us Bogdanović and Joe Harris and we get Tobias Harris, or we give them Tobias Harris and Furkan Korkmaz, because I don't really want to cut a player for Joe Harris because I think this team's pretty deep, so I'd throw Furkan in there. Also, I want to free Furkan. He's been a good soldier. And
finally granted trade request, and this is the worst team ever.
Yeah, right.
Times a charm.
He needs to go to a bad, especially a team that needs shooting. I would do this for Tobias's, or for his sake, but like, I don't know what kind of assets would be in there, because the advantage of the Pistons doing that is, A, I guess they want Tobias Harris, but B, if I'm trying to look at it objectively, Bogdanovich. So the interesting thing about his contract, I believe I read this correctly when I was looking at it, but right, $2 million guarantee for next year. So I don't think for the Sixers who are looking to hunt stars, I don't think they would keep that entire $20 million. I think they would waive him and just take the $2 million hit. And maybe the Pistons are thinking that same thing where they're like, hey, we don't want to pay this guy $20 million next year. Rather than taking a $2 million hit next year, we can just completely get rid of that by trading for the expiring Tobias Harris. So I don't know, Sam, I don't know if you want to comment on the validity or what that trade would look like, but I don't know. What do you think about the Tobias Harris Pistons rumors?
I get why they would want a guy like Tobias, but like, are they really going to give up other older guys? Like, that doesn't make sense as much to me. It's like, okay, you want an adult in the room, but Bogdanovich is an adult and he's older actually than Tobias.
And he's a better shooter. Probably. Like, right. And they desperately need shooter.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was an interesting little, yeah, I feel like it's a tidbit that got a little bit, I mean, not to question like the report, but like, it was just kind of mentioned as a tidbit by James Edwards from The Athletic, who was very plugged in. Like,
I think there's been a few reports, though. It's not, it wasn't just his, but I think Edwards was the most recent one where he mentioned OG, Miles Bridges, whatever, and one other person that was probably that was better than Tobias.
I don't think that it makes sense for the Pistons to trade for Tobias at all. I mean, again, if the Sixers like really like Boyan as an upgrade and they're willing to include some draft capital, obviously it sounds like the Pistons would not be mad bringing back Tobias for the rest of the season, bringing him back former Piston, obviously, but I just can't see it happening. Yeah, unless it's like a three-team swap, that is hard to like predict anyway. I don't think Tobias will. It wouldn't be surprising if he ends this season on a team other than the Sixers, but I really don't think that team will be the Pistons.
Yeah, and personally, I think Tobias Harris, if there was some other way where we don't get someone for this year, like let's say they want to keep Boyan and just keep building this thing out, I actually think going to what we were talking about Covington and Morris earlier, I forgot to say this, I think I'd rather just have Covington and Morris play over Tobias Harris, to be completely honest, which might sound crazy, but I just think they, like, I think it would be addition by subtraction just getting rid of Tobias and having our other role player step up or someone for him. But Mulse, Tobias to the Pistons, thoughts?
I don't think it's a significant enough move anyway.
Really?
I mean, Bogdanovich doesn't move the needle,
but he shoots a ton of threes and he shoots them very well, which is an issue this current team has, especially with no James Harden anymore. Not that, you know, Harden was everything, but they have so many reluctant shooters, and I don't know, like, they've been skating by these games because they've been shooting very well, but is that really going to maintain as we shoot some of the fewest attempts of threes in the league? I don't know, like, what are your thoughts? Keep going.
Yeah, no, it's tough, and I agree they definitely need shooting, but I don't hate Tobias Harris as much as you. I definitely don't think he's a good player, and clearly not worth his contract, which I know we've been over a million times, but it's hard to say. I just wouldn't make that move and screw up the chemistry and kind of what we've had, and Tobias has been here for years. I don't know how you can move him for Bogdanovich, who, in my mind, that doesn't make you a championship team. It's not a move worthwhile, especially if you have to give up draft capital or another player, whatever the case is.
I wouldn't
is.
Give up draft capital for it, but if they want, or unless it was like a second-round pick, or if they wanted Jaden Springer, I guess I would consider.
Yeah, I mean, you got to trade. If you're making a trade this season, it has to be significant enough where, like, we can sit here and say, okay, they've increased their chances for this season, clearly, like, without a doubt. And Bogdanovich does not clearly, and sure, maybe you improve from the aspect of shooting, but overall, is the team more talented? Did it really increase their odds, as Daryl Morey says when they all the
right.
time? I mean, it's, I don't
and
know.
That is a fair point. I'm not disagreeing with what you said in terms of, like, philosophy thing, but let me just ask you, what does Tobias Harris do better besides, like, posting up, I guess? What does he do better than Boyan Bogdanovich?
Yeah, not much. But I still I don't think it's significant enough, though. Just, it's not like he's that much worse, is kind of my argument.
I guess I would just disagree. So Boyan's shooting 7.5 threes a game, which is an insane number, and he's making 39% of them. And he gets the line a good amount, too, 4.5.
Mind you.
Right. And yeah. He kind of has to shoot them, but even in the past, he's always been a high volume guy. Like, on the Utah teams, he was shooting 7.3 in 2020 when he was on Utah. So I don't know. I think he's a bad defender. I think Tobias might be a better defender if I were to go back to that original question. But I think this team needs buckets / threes. So I would do it.
But Bogdanovich is definitely an upgrade over Tobias offensively for the shooting specifically, but I think a lot of their issue, like the Sixers, I have dunksandthrees.com pulled up right now. Their Sixers shot distribution, they rank 23rd in the percentage of shots they shoot from three. I think a lot of that is just they don't have many guys who can create threes for other people.
Right.
No, the amount of shooters they have is like fine. Like they've got obviously Maxey, who's doing some creating too, but he can obviously shoot. Melton, Oubre, Batum, Morris. Like they have plenty of guys who can shoot. It's just that they don't have many of guys who can, you know, draw the defense in and then, you know, get to the threes. And part of it is like the Sixers take a good amount of shots, you know, inside. But that was part of to, you know, almost not to sway totally off topic, but that's kind of why I was interested in LaVine, because
we can talk about LaVine.
He can create too. Like he can shoot those threes and create them. Now the Bulls being so good without him has kind of softened my stance. And I don't think they're going to go for him anyway because of his contract. But I think their shooting is more of like they're just, you know, getting different types of looks. And they have plenty of guys who can shoot, but not many of guys who can create those shots. And Boyan, I think, can help with both, mainly in like the shooting them department.
To that point, though, I just want to say this. I agree with you in terms of the creation not being great, especially Maxey not being a natural point guard. However, a lot of the guys you mentioned like Morris Covington, those guys don't play because we have Tobias Harris. And Tobias Harris is a quote-unquote creator who just dribbles into mid-range shots the entire game. So I think if you just lost Tobias Harris, you would have an increase in creation. And if you also gained Bojan Bogdanović in that same acquisition, that would be an additional level of creation. So I don't know. I'm not saying he's the guy. And then your point about Zach LaVine is very true as well. I was going to transition to the other Bogdanović, who would actually be my preferred trade target, I think. But I'll talk about Zach LaVine right now because, like you said, he's a little different in terms of he's more on-ball creation. Maltz, I know, is very pro-trading for Zach LaVine. I guess, Sam, we haven't gotten your official stance on trading for Zach LaVine. I know you said that you don't think the organization would do it, but would you do it, or at least
explain? I think there's a vision to where he fits in nicely with the Sixers. I think I'm shifting more towards the no, but I don't think it would be some like horrific trade if they do. Like, I think they actually could use another ball handler next to Maxey, not to take away his reps because he doesn't deserve them, but to give him different, you know, give him some
would make his job easier.
Attack. Yeah, to make his job easier, to give Joel another like high volume guy to play with when Maxey has to sit. And I think if LaVine buys into, like, you know, he's not a great defender, but he played a lot of minutes for a Bulls team last year that was great defensively. I think even number one post All-Star break. And part of that was Caruso and current Sixer Pat Bev. But we've seen, like, people have been concerned about, oh, you can't trade for LaVine, the defense is going to fall off a cliff. I disagree. And he's not, he's more of like a link to a chain that holds on, not one that like you throw on. Like, he's not going to instantly be like the Derek White and just like go guard the best guard and shut them down. I think, again, I'm leaning more towards no. My official stance is that it's not going to happen because of the contract. Like, I would be very surprised if Daryl Morey decides Zach LaVine is worth giving up on the cap space plan.
Yep.
But I do think there's a vision where he works with the Sixers, especially if he buys in on defense, if he buys into being the number three guy. But I would just say no. I think there are other guys who fit better.
I would. So once again, I mostly agree, but it's actually funny. I think I've been trending towards yes. I'm still a no, but
the
I've Bulls
been being good without him hasn't changed your mind that much.
No, because, well, I mean, like, yes, it's definitely noteworthy, but it's one of those where I just think about it, and I don't think anyone's really going to be moved at the deadline. I think this is going to be a very quiet deadline. Just looking around the league, like I look at potential trade possibilities every day. LaVine will probably be the best player that has moved by a mile, and I also think we've seen this time in, time again, and I guess we've seen it backfire too, but when guys are at their lowest point in value with Zach LaVine, everyone's talking about his contract. If the Sixers traded for Zach LaVine and then we're in like the Eastern Conference Finals, like even if they got bounced in the Eastern Conference Finals, Zach LaVine would have value because people would be like, oh my God, like, obviously if they make it there, he probably played well, but he would look good. He would look better than Tobias. He's not like a Tobias Harris level contract because he's a lot better than Tobias Harris. I think he's at the lowest point of his value. It doesn't really look like you have to give up anything. I think if you really wanted to move on from Zach LaVine, I think you could do it in the offseason and give up very minimally. And worst case scenario, you just have Zach LaVine back. So That's the way I look at it right now. I would still look at other options, but Maltz, I know you've been very pro Zach LaVine, but I don't know. What do you think about all that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, the contract obviously isn't the most ideal, but especially with the cap space this summer, but I think as a basketball player, just from that standpoint, yes, he's a really good fit. Can handle, create, shoot, exactly what we need, and he's a star caliber player in the league when healthy. I know he's been injured recently, right? He's still out, so yeah. What's his status there? I mean, obviously, if you're trading for a guy that's injured or is injured now, you want to make sure he's good to go for the long haul.
Yeah, and he would still certainly get there before Alec Burks did when he was acquired, even if he was injured and didn't have a leg, because Alec Burks took 37 months. But yes, I think LaVine's interesting. I'm still trending towards no, but this also came on. So I'm just going to mention it. We're not going to really talk about it, but I know before I was on the Lowry Markkanen bandwagon, but it seems like the price, which is kind of predictable because it's Danny Ainge, just seems absurdly high, and I don't even think the Sixers should look at pursuing that, even though he fits a lot of things. I guess while we're talking about, I'll switch to another star level player that's rumored in the same like Zach LaVine things. Would you guys prefer DeJounte Murray to Zach LaVine?
No, I'm out on DeJounte
Murray. Oh wow! All right, go ahead, Sam.
I just don't. I think his stock is not necessarily as high as it has been. And again, maybe he would work better. The Hawks are so painfully mid that maybe he does need a change of scenery to a legitimately good team. Like, I don't know. Like, he's a solid player. I'm not as confident on his fit, and it's not as much of his lack of shooting. I don't think his defense is as good as it used to be. And again, that's probably something that the Sixers could help with Nurse and having Embiid to help. But
That's fine. I've been he's a guy that when I look at it, I've kind of soured on, and I want to hear Maltz's thoughts in a second, but I want to just quickly say to the point on the defense. I was wondering, because obviously I've been going back and forth, Atlanta's bad. I like a lot of their players, so you have to wonder, maybe I'm wrong about some of their players. Am I wrong about DeJounte being one of them, because he's probably the player I like the most? Not saying that he's better than Trae Young, but I've just always been a DeJounte guy. But with the defense specifically, I'm like, well, in today's NBA, you can kind of just get Trae Young on you any play you want, especially with how bad Trae Young is. Like, there's not a lot of recovery and whatnot. And I do think Murray's defense is worse, but I do wonder, did he look a lot better? Because in San Antonio, I thought he was legit. I thought he was like an all-defense team guy, and I think he did.
He made a team like his second year or something.
Right, and I look at it, and I think that might just be a Trae Young thing. Not to blame everything on Trae. Trae, you know, he has his flaws, but he's also clearly a very good player. But it's just like, is it even possible you can be a good defense when Trae Young, someone that small too? It's not like a guy with size that's a bad defender. It's a guy that's short, and like, he's the easiest guy to pick on, and Murray can only do so much, and then offensively, I think it similarly hinders, but we didn't really talk about that. So I don't know. That was just my point about the defense, though I do think a lot of your points are valid about Murray. Maltz, I believe you're a bigger Murray guy than Sam is, so what were your thoughts on trading for Murray?
Yeah, I would still want LaVine over him, even though defensively, yes, DeJounte.
So Murray has a much better contract, just because I know you're not a contract expert.
What's the contract on him?
I think he's around $20 million a year. As opposed to like
four. How many years left does he have?
He just signed in the offseason. We were actually recording a pod as they signed DeJounte Murray. But anyway, still, you can go on. I don't know if
that's from a player standpoint.
You're here for the ball knowledge, okay?
Yeah, I mean, like, for the ball, the okay? Yeah, from the player standpoint, though, yes, like actual on the court, I would rather have LaVine just as a fit with this team. I think he complements Maxey nice, that he can play off ball a lot with Maxey still running point, and they both are natural scorers, versus DeJounte can still score the ball, and he's played decent, but
I also think he's a better passer. Also, quick, 4 years, $114 million is his deal with a player option for the last year, which I would think he's going to accept.
Is he younger than LaVine?
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, he's got to be. Yeah, he's definitely younger than LaVine.
I mean, I wouldn't be mad with either. I mean, honestly, they're both solid fits. It's just, do you want to lead more defensively, or do you want more shot creation, which I think this team needs shot creation.
But I think Murray's a better passer, so
he can help others get open. But I like a guy. I mean, I don't need. I'd rather rely on the star player to make shots and just create for himself, and it can also create for others. Still, it's like LaVine can't pass, but yeah, I'd rather have him over, just fit wise from that standpoint.
That's interesting. I mean, so when Murray was in San Antonio, once again, not try to totally go back on who knows, the San Antonio Spurs teams were terrible. He was an all-star. He was averaging 9.2 assists. Now he's averaging 5.3 assists. But those 9.2 assists he was averaging only came with 2.6 turnovers a game. He was a very efficient passer. He was a great defender. He was averaged. He led the league in steals that year with 2 a game. I know some of the stats are inflated from him playing in San Antonio, but he's taken other leaps too. He's shooting way more threes now. When he first started, he was not shooting any threes. Now he's shooting 6.2 threes a game on 37% shooting. I don't know. Like, my only hesitation is kind of what Sam was saying about Zach LaVine, where it's like, wow, they're not very good, and they're better without him. And with Murray, it's kind of like, huh? Like, to my initial point, like, am I just overrating Murray? But I don't know. I look at him and I see a guy that I actually think would be a perfect fit with Maxey, because he has the passing prowess that Maxey does not. He doesn't have the shot creation, but he does have the defense. I don't know. I think they'd be a really good fit. I'm not saying we should go all in on him. I'm just saying if the prices were similar, I would prefer Murray personally. I don't think the prices will be similar, because it seems like you can just get Zach LaVine for nothing. I don't even know if the Hawks really want to trade Murray. I have no idea what they're thinking, but he has been putting rumors. The Hawks have been dog shit and he's been linked to LA, but that just was LA's rumored interest in him, rather than the Hawks actually trading him. So I don't know. I think I might disagree with you guys on this one, but I do think it's close, and I do think it might be a matter of preference of do you want.
And I do wonder the fit just with Maxey in general. I mean, obviously Embiid and Maxey have had something special all season, and we've seen it. And that to, I don't want to say disrupt that chemistry, because yes, DeJounte Murray could very well come in here and run.
I just think it's a better Melton
and be a good yeah, which I definitely agree with, and it's you see it play out every night, but.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, LaVine would be interesting from the standpoint of, like, yes, he's a shot creator, but, you know, you don't want him taking away shots from Maxey at the same time where Maxey is developing and becoming an all-star level player. So it's a hard thing to, especially mid-season. It's the thing with the Sixers. Every year we make a move at the deadline that is a notable move that kind of shakes up the roster, and they kind of have to get acclimated and get used to each other. And then you see the stats like, oh, they've played 18 games this season going into the play, whatever it is, as a starting five. Like, you see it all the time. And it's nice for once to kind of just play carefree basketball, right? James Harden isn't here. The team is constructed the way it is. It's been that way the entire season. To shake it up big time, like to make a big move like DeJounte Murray, like Zach LaVine, do you even want to do that? Because the chemistry doesn't get talked about enough, but it's a real thing. It happens. It's real. Listen to Pat.
I agree with that.
I think you do make a trade for that, because as nice as the chemistry is, talent wins out in the playoffs. And there's still,
and this team doesn't have enough talent. It's not like they like are close and like maybe we're not seeing it. It's something where it's like this team's very clearly not with the other guy. Anyway, go on, Sam. I didn't
mean it. Mid-season trades are tough. I definitely hear what you're saying, Maltz. But I do think, and again, it depends on the guy. But I do think if they see an opportunity to get a guy they think is a big upgrade, I think they got to go for it. Like every year you're not. I remember like the talk this offseason about like, but this past offseason about like, should the Sixers do like a plan where they just take a gap year and they just, you know, kind of chill out, reset their assets for next year. And I thought that was ridiculous, because you need to take advantage of every year and be as healthy and wants to be here. So as much as the chemistry and the community is nice, and again, it's tough because they're still going through this. They're not even 2 full months in with their new team after making the Harden trade. But I still do think talent wins out eventually. And you got to, you know, even if you're building a team on the fly, if there's a potential for a big upgrade, you got to go for it.
Yeah. And I agree with Malta's overall point. I actually think it's one of the most underrated things is people don't realize that those teams that make those giant midseason acquisitions, they never win. Zero.
Right.
There's zero history of doing it. The Sixers are probably the team that came closest when they acquired Butler. And even that was earlier in the year, if you want to still count that.
I have a target for you guys to – I want to throw by to see. He to me, he seems like a guy who – you know, it's an upgrade, but not someone who's going to completely change the makeup of the team. He kind of does have that like better Melton sort of angle to him. What do you guys think about Emmanuel quickly?
The Knicks guy. Are they interested in trading him?
what do you think it would cost? So they were interested last year. I don't think they're interested in moving him this year, but they didn't extend him. And there's been like, even yesterday, like, I don't think quickly is going to demand a trade. Like, it's a tough situation and he doesn't seem like the type of guy to, but you know, Tibbs' decision-making with like when to play him is kind of questionable. Like, he can play alongside Brunson, but Tibbs seems to be so averse to it that he sat him yesterday as he was having a great game against the Thunder and put him in for RJ, who has continued to like not take a leap forward and the Knicks ended up losing. So I think
I'm taking a leap forward is an understatement. Anyway,
right. I think He is. I don't know if the degree of if he's being shopped or if he's just available, but I think the fact that they didn't extend him and the fact that they're always so big on like acquiring draft picks leads me to believe that like it's either possible that they could trade, the Knicks could trade quickly to move on from him and get some assets for the deadline, or in a three-team trade, they could go that way too. I think he is available more. He's more available than he should be. The Knicks trading him would be very stupid, but you know, this is just not a great decision to throw right now.
I'll keep it short and sweet because I want Maltz to talk about him, but Quickly is my fucking guy. I've talked about him so many times. I liked him better than Maxey for a while, like pre-draft, and then towards the end of the draft, I put Maxey ahead of him, as we got closer to the draft. But then as their careers began, I was like, Quickly might still be better. I just love his skill set. Quickly's my guy. So, Maltz, what are your thoughts on trading for Quickly?
What are we giving up?
I mean, if the Knicks are just like, okay, let's solidify this. Yeah, I think literally either Perk or D House's contract. And
right, that's what I'm saying. They fit it. Probably House.
Oh, yeah, I do that in a heartbeat. Absolutely.
How many draft picks? Like, are we talking like one first rounder? Because like one.
It might be one and like a bunch of seconds. I mean, I guess it depends. I don't know what the exact first rounders are, but.
It's tough because he's a free agent at the end of the year as well.
But he is a restricted free agent. He's still.
Right, you can bring him back, but I'm just saying for the Sixers, right. They would have to pay him. Whatever. Right. So
I
would do it. Be a nice fit. And he's boys with Maxey, right? So hey,
yeah,
they're
would help. Dynamic.
The power of college teammates teaming up. You saw it with the Kings. You saw it with the Knicks right
the
now.
Knicks are right. Nova Super Team
Pennsylvania legend Archie.
So, oh my God! They need bridges. Come on, they need bridges.
That's the next market inefficiency. Is you got to get guys from college to team up and have them vibe together and have them win.
Yeah, I mean. He's great. I just want to. I would like to see. I don't know what the price tag is. But he fits a definite need. Like we've talked about backup point guards, and I don't think there's not one that I love. He's the closest that comes to that. Where in terms of all the guys are either really good, like DeJounte Murray, like where you pay a like because Murray would cost more than Quickly. So it's either something like that and harder to integrate all those other things, or you're getting like a Monty Morris that I'm not even sure is going to stick around the postseason. So I think it's a tough one. All right. I talked about him briefly.
Also,
yeah.
I was going to give you a quick update, by the way. Pistons are currently beating the Celtics by 4 in the second quarter.
I did see
they're up 35-31. That's huge. Wow. I feel like that needs to be talked about. You know, we discussed it, so it's got to be brought up.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Pistons Mania podcast.
We talked a lot about the Pistons, but honestly, it was good talk. I mean, not to completely rehash the pod in the middle of it, but yes. All right. Another quick trade target because we talked about Murray. I want to talk about Bogdan Bogdanovic. I alluded to it earlier. Guy is fucking shooting a million threes. He's shooting 8.8 a game. He's made more threes than, like, I don't want to say NBA teams. But if you look at the list of made threes in the NBA, it's, like, Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, Tyrese Maxey, like, superstars. And guys that made a ton of threes. And then it's just Bogdan Bogdanovic. And I love him. I think he's a little bit better than Boyan. I think he would cost a little bit more than Boyan. He's under contract. He doesn't have that 2 million guarantee that you can just rip away. But he is a bit younger. I think he has a little bit more, I don't want to say creation because Boyan's better at getting the line, but I think he's a bit of a better defender. He's a little bit more spry. I don't know. I've always been a huge Bogdanovic guy. Once again, I don't want to mess up the cap space, but I don't know. What do you guys think about trading for him? Does it not move the needle? Or I know we just talked about a lot better players, but the exception maybe Quickly. But
I think a gunner like that, aside Embiid and Maxey, would be huge. He does have a little bit of juice off the bounce, but he's not a guy that you like give it to in space and let him cook.
Right.
He's a guy that you set pin downs for, and he can fire away off balance, or he can like kind of drive into the lane. I don't think he's super great defensively or as a playmaker still, but with the way he's shooting the ball, and you get that volume with Embiid and Maxey, I think that would be a great fit.
Yeah. Maltz, what do you think of him?
I agree. I would love to see Bogdanovic. A little two-man game with Joel Embiid would be awesome to watch. I mean, that would be great. And yes, like Billy said, he attempts a shit ton of threes, which is exactly what we need alongside the two. So yeah, it'd be huge. Great asset to pick up.
I'm going to let, we're going to do rapid fire through these. I don't know if these guys are even available or if they're even good. These are like the bargain bottom options. We'll talk about more as the trade deadline prevails. I don't know if these guys, but I was just looking at the shit team, seeing you might want to shake something up. Some of these aren't. Dorian Finney-Smith, very good. I'm not sure he's available, nor am I sure that I want to invest in the guy's having a career year. Sam?
I think he's more surefire than like some of the other wings the Sixers have, but I think it would be interesting. I mean, I don't think the Nets are going to trade one of the guys they really like for to the Sixers.
They're not really contending though, the Nets. I mean, Mikhail's been terrible for his standards. And
yeah, I mean, again, if whoever offers the most for him was going to get him, but he would be fine.
I just think
I will say this though. I guess like the Sixers wing room is like okay, so I don't think they need to really invest that many assets in a guy like Dorian, especially when there's somebody they could find for probably way cheaper that does most of what he does.
Yeah, so Finney Smith, he's a career 36% three shooter. He's shooting 45 this year, and he's shooting on more attempts. I don't know really how much I buy it. He's also, like, he doesn't get to the line. He doesn't create at all. He plays, like, good defense. He's prototypical 3-and-D, but I don't know how much better he is than Robert Covington. I think he's at the height of his value right now. So, I don't know. Maltz, you're the expert on wings.
We have a lot of wings. I'm winging pro-am. I'm watching wings with the Sixers.
Chowing down on
wings. I'm eating wings for the Fantasy Basketball League. I'm a wing expert.
Yeah.
But not this season. Shout out, Zach. bottom line is that I don't think Dorian Finney-Smith is going to move the needle. So I'm good. All right.
Fair enough.
Better Rocco. Carry on.
Fair point. That's kind of what I was saying. That's why we're going to plow through these. PJ Washington. Similar kind of thing.
I feel like he's been a Sixers trade target for years now.
Worst shooter though than Finney Smith this year. He's not really like, and he's not as good defensively as you would kind of think either. I don't know. Anything more than that, or just
I do. No, he's related to George. Yeah. So let's do it.
Yeah, fair enough. Related to George. All right. Well, I'm not gonna get into that. All right. Luke Kennard. He is a lights out shooter. I'm actually a little bit more interested. I don't know if the Grizzlies want to trade him just because now they've been winning, but they're still going to be dog shit just based off where they were pre-Ja Morant return.
I mean, not dog shit, but like they're probably not going to be contending this year.
Right. Like, I don't know. They're at best a play-in team.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, the West is deep. It's not very top-heavy, but it's like the Suns are the 10 seed, 11 seed? I know the Suns have just looked bad, but also a lot of it's like, I can't really say they're much better than the teams in front of them, and I still think the Suns are kind of good. But I don't know. Kennard's having a terrible year. Just an absolute flamethrower.
Diet Boyan now.
Right. And so I think if you're looking at the price, it's like, do we take this guy? You say Diet Boyan. He led the league in three-point percentage the last 2 years. Sure. So I don't. And he shoots up.
I would say I like Kennard. I like Kennard. And I think he'd be a nice fit here.
He'd be like, we could try to use him like JJ Redick, except he'd be worse.
Billy's going for all the charts. Billy, would you take Redick right now on the team?
I'm not going to lie. I probably would. Or Jaden Springer? Absolutely.
Out of the booth?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Wow. There we go. I would take him over Tobias Harris. That is that more absurd to say? The guy making $40 million a year?
It's getting out of hand.
I completely disagree. I don't know. It's also like Seth Curry's another guy that could probably be mentioned in this same breath while we're having.
Legend.
Well, he's best not playing for Dallas, and even though Dallas has been good, I could see them send him.
Why didn't he have that? I saw Luka reacted. Like, what was the last second shot and chucked it up and missed it? Something. Right.
I'm not sure. I thought you were going to talk about the fake video of him smoking weed and whatever that.
No, I wasn't going to go there.
That just wasn't him. So I feel like a lot of people were not clear that that wasn't him. And he wasn't released. He's still on the team. He's just not playing. I don't know. Seth Curry, I'm not really too interested in, to be honest, because I didn't think he held up in the playoffs the other time he was with us. All right. That's all I got for trade targets, but I do want to do some. We're going to rapid fire through this once again because it's getting long, but a lot of good talk. It's something we haven't really talked about. It's weird to start now on it. I meant to do a pod a week or two ago when it would have been more applicable, but we haven't really talked about the MVP all year. And is crazy because I think Joel Embiid, if the season ends today, I think he's well deserving of the NBA and Jesus MVP. I don't know. I think there's a lot of good candidates, but I think Embiid is the winner so far. I don't know if that'll maintain, but what he's been doing this year is just insane. So I don't know, Sam. What are your thoughts on the MVP
he's
race?
Clearly the MVP right now, especially considering I don't think it's being talked about enough that everyone was like fading the Sixers, seeing that they were going to be now. Obviously, no one knew when the Harden trade was going to strike, but even then, people knew that, or people thought that they were not going to be as good as they are right now. Now, obviously, they've had the help of that ridiculous cupcake stretch where they played like all pretty much
Wizards back. Pistons merchant. Is what you're saying?
Kind of a little bit now, but I mean, they legitimately have been better than people thought, and Embiid has been better than he was last year. I feel like it's hard.
Destroyed Gobert too, which is we didn't talk about because of when this podcast was, but yeah, destroyed the Timberwolves.
He crushed it. Yeah, very fair for him to win, for to be the MVP frontrunner right now. A lot can change though. This was mentioned on another podcast. I think it was a Uniball podcast that they talked about the straw poll and Embiid leading it. But they also pointed that last year at this point in the season, Tatum was leading it. So a lot can change.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of that was just because the Celtics were, as a team, shooting like 45% from three. So like they were so good that it had to go to like a Tatum pretty much. But yeah, I think Embiid is the most deserving candidate right now. And as long as the Sixers are still pretty good and he's leading the league in scoring and playing less minutes than he did last year and averaging like career high assists, doing better in rebounding, still a great defender. Like, I think he's putting together an even better case than last year, which is crazy because he had an amazing case last year. So, yeah.
Yeah, I would completely agree. However, I do think there are guys right on his tail. Maltz, what are your thoughts on the MVP?
I mean, as long as he stays, obviously he has to play, but I mean, as long as he stays healthy and continues, at least, I mean, it's hard to put up 40 a night, which he's been doing recently, and 40 and 50 points, like it's nothing. And the way that he 40 scores,
all of December, I believe. I mean, we're still in December, but
it's just impressive because there's guys out, and it's funny how, and you know, you can scroll through Twitter and Instagram and all the platforms and kind of read the comments and see people react to Joel Embiid and free throw merchant. But when you ask the players, and it's been, even Anthony Edwards said, like, he's impossible to guard. I don't how they lose the game.
Right.
It's true. Call. Like, it's just, it's so cool though, because the players are obviously on the court with them, and it's just great to kind of see the reactions from them. And he's unstoppable. I mean, when Joel Embiid really gets good, like, there's not a single player one-on-one that can guard him. Truly believe that. There's just not. He can score in too many different ways. That's the problem. He's unguardable. The way he's passed this season, he took a huge leap in assist, which you love to see. He's playing, I think, due to James Harden leaving is a big piece for sure.
But still, not everyone can just do that and still remain just as efficient.
And like he won MVP last season, and he's putting up better stats than he just previously had, which was phenomenal stats. I mean, 35 points per game is insane. He's a center. I mean, it's insane. So, yes.
I think Oubre called him the best scorer of our generation. Now, granted, Oubre's on his team, but it's a little biased there. And I did see Jokic today, who we've never said a bad word about, and we've always trusted as a reliable source and someone that we've just been, you know, we just praise him.
Love Jokic, yeah.
Yeah, great guy.
Great horse racer.
You know, the media doesn't talk about him enough. I mean, just does all the right things.
Anyway.
I wasn't even getting into that. But anyway, Jokic, I saw that he was ranking his top five players. I believe he didn't include Giannis in his top five.
I watched that clip. It was very nonchalant. He wasn't like number one, this guy, number two, this guy.
He named five players and didn't include Giannis.
Who was his top five?
It wasn't including him. But Embiid, I believe, was the first name he said.
Yeah,
and then it was Luka, LeBron.
Podcast.
Yeah.
He said MBJ.
It was Embiid, Luka, LeBron, Durant, and Steph were the first five guys that Jokic named. And again, this wasn't like a super definitive ranking, but those were
Guys. Just casually out there. Okay, I mean, that's not a bad list, but I understand where he's... It's funny, though, no Giannis.
Yeah. Speaking of Curry, by the way, 11th seed. Fucking fraud. Averaging 4 assists a game. Glorified shooting guard.
He won that finals MVP that everyone has been looking for, and now he's back and Billy is like, yep, I saw it. I knew it.
No, I just want I want to say about Curry, real quick.
CP3 effect.
Because I'm not a hater of Curry anymore, even though I said that. I'm truly not. I respect what he did against the Celtics, even if I was kind of rooting against it because whatever, Curry. All I'm saying is this is evidence. Everybody always talks about how instrumental he was when they won, and of course he was, in 2015 when he won MVP with the most fraudulent stat line I've ever seen, currently worse than what Tyrese Maxey's doing right now. But when Curry won MVP, his numbers were, he was a worse player than he is now, and the Warriors are the 11th seed because one player can't do everything, as it turns out. And he's still a good player, but I just think I think this is telling that he's not much worse than he was of years ago, and the rest of the team's just worse, and they are so much worse. Like I don't know.
Guys are falling off, man. Like Dario Saric and Brandon Podziemski are like this second and third.
All right, Clay's still shooting like 39% from three.
I feel like he just can't move the same as much anymore.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, I feel like the bar gets set pretty well. I don't think the Warriors have been very good. I think Steph has been very clearly good and everyone else has tailed off. I'm just saying it's one of those where the team was so good before and I think we underrated the rest of the guys and their contributions to the wins, especially when Draymond Green wasn't exactly a psychopath and wasn't like, and was actually like
punching people.
Several things. That's all I want to say about Curry, because once again, I was perusing all the bad teams and I was like, Curry. Interesting.
Hey, Target?
Yeah.
Imagine.
I mean, this Warriors team's going nowhere, and Clay's going to leave, and CP3 is aging, and Wiggins is a horrible contract. Like, it is actually interesting. I don't know if Curry's going to end
his career. Mickey Mouse run is, it was fun while it lasted, being put into the All-Star by K-pop fans.
Yeah. Some are calling the entire Warriors run Mickey Mouse. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. All right, I'm just going back on MVP really quick. I think Jokic is still going to win it. He started off incredible, had a really terrible stretch while Embiid was killing it, so that didn't really help his case. But the Nuggets have been back to winning. They're currently the 3 seed, but they actually have 2 more wins than the Thunder. They just have one more loss, so they're ranked behind them. But also, I don't know if the Thunder are going to maintain, though. I do really – Shea's another name to mention, as well as Luka, but Luka's record's a little lower. So I think there's plenty of great candidates.
I think Shea has a very good chance to be in the top three. I don't know about winning it, but the fact that he is the driving force behind one of the better teams, the team that's made the leap from pretty good to very good, I think he is very deserving. And probably, I mean, it is tough. Maybe I'm just like fading Nuggets a little bit unintentionally, but I feel like Embiid is clearly the favorite now. I mean, again, a lot can change, but... I don't know, I guess we'll see. SGA, though, very much deserving of MVP love. He is not only very good, but also super fun to watch.
Yeah, and I think he might just get it from voter fatigue. Like, it just seems like, I mean, we've had the same three guys for the last, 5 years, where it's been the discussion. I just think Shea, they're the 2 seed. He's been incredible. I'm not saying he's undeserving. I do think Embiid and Jokic are both more deserving. I think I could argue Giannis too, though. I also wouldn't give it to Giannis just because I don't know how much. Like, I mean, Brooke Lopez is fucking amazing, and he has Lillard too. Like, and they're only marginally better than the Sixers. So I just think it's interesting. Fuck it. He doesn't deserve it after being a whiny bitch against the Pacers. That's my take. Fuck Giannis. I'm dropping him out. Anyway,
anti-corniness. Yeah, he really is next to LeBron. He's being all corny and shit and making.
Whoa! We don't insult LeBron here. Well, actually, you can. It's fine. I believe in freedom of speech, roughly.
That game was so funny, dude. The ladder shit from last year was really all time ridiculous.
He took it over the top, but I mean,
he took it way over the top, buddy. Like, these people are trying to do their fucking jobs. It's one of the arenas that like they have to switch into a hockey floor. Like, it's fucking important. Relax.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it.
Getting the Brickin' for Chicken, the full Brickin' for Chicken by himself was one of the most all-time athletic feats I've ever seen. Congrats to him for that.
Impressive. Right. Impressive. Superstar.
Maltz, what do you think of the MVP race? I know we talked about other candidates, same thing.
I agree the voter fatigue is definitely real, and it is the same three guys, but guess what? They're the best three guys in the league consistently. Yeah. It goes to the best player. It just should. And I know there's vague and most valuable and this and that, but like it goes to the best player. Like Jokic was clearly the best 2 years ago. I mean, Embiid dominated last season and deserving of the award. And I think if he continues to average 35 points per game or whatever it is, which he'll probably not, but whatever.
Right, which is why I think he won't. And I think Jokic is good.
I think it's going to be a very close race, which it is every single season. And Embiid's health comes down to it. I mean, if he's going to miss 2 game stretches, once and whatever it is, or 3 or 4, it starts to add up, then that's a huge factor. So, but if he can stay healthy and continue what he's doing, I don't see why he can't repeat. But we'll see. No. But the media is definitely against him a little bit.
Right. I think that's going to be the tiebreaker, essentially, I think right now, while they have Embiid ahead, I think there's going to be a run by Jokic, and then Jokic is going to be ahead, even if he's not necessarily deserving. Or Shea, one of the two.
I like Shea. I think Shea is a year or two away from winning it. I think they're ahead of schedule, the Thunder, big time. But I don't think he's there yet. But he's a very good player. I mean, he's definitely in the conversation.
The Thunder have been very good. It's kind of actually what I was saying about Curry earlier, where I think a lot of credit doesn't go to the teammates. Shea obviously deserves a lot, and I really like him. But I do think if you think he and Embiid are just as valuable as each other, I just completely disagree with that statement in terms of, like, if you put Embiid on the Thunder, just straight up traded the two, I think the fucking Thunder would be insane. I mean, a lot of size on that team, but it's just like, I don't know. Jalen Williams, as Sam saw as he massacred the Knicks, just Jalen Williams is awesome. Chet's great. Like, he's putting up Wemby's numbers, essentially.
I think also that, like, last month and a half plays a big factor, too. Like, if you're on a tear for that last month, whatever it is.
Yep, and fresh in the mind.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's
a season is really more important in
it. It's a huge piece. I mean, like, yeah, Embiid's dominating now, but if he's sucking, you know, in April or not in March or, you know, February, or whatever, it's a big sign there for sure. So, yeah, if Shea can ball out and they get a ton of wins and they're the two seed in March, okay, we got a conversation there for sure. But right now it's too early to even tell, but Embiid's the front runner and should be.
And it could change. Aaron Gordon got destroyed by a dog, apparently. I hope everything
got that right dog in
because
him.
He's going to be out for a while. And he's definitely very important to A, the Nugget success, but B, to Jokic. I don't want to say he doesn't. To be clear, Jokic makes him a lot better, but they just fit very well together.
And he's a good player.
So he's very instrumental to both of their successes. So that'll be interesting how that plays out. But yeah, I mean, MVP is far away. I just thought we didn't really talk about MVP all year, and Embiid is the clear front runner through 30 games in my mind. So we had to mention it. But that's going to wrap us up. It's good talk with all of you. I'm just going to take 10 seconds to say this because I have to acknowledge it that the Clippers have been on a run, but Harden is still a fraud and is going to explode in the playoffs in a bad way. He's going to be fucking terrible. Clippers are going to be awful. Anyway, that'll be all for now. Sam, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter/X at by Sam DiGiovanni, writing about the Sixers for Clutch Points, writing about the very sleepy Phillies for Philly Sports Network. They still have some team needs that they haven't addressed yet, but it seems like this MLB offseason is especially slow and sleepy. So,
yeah,
I would have if they could add an extra bat for the bench, maybe another reliever,
or just like, you know, someone else other than Bryce Harper who can hit in the postseason. I'll
take that. Oh, my goodness.
Anyway,
Johan Rojas next. Watch.
Yeah, I have some. It's a shame we haven't done takes in a while because pods have been running long, but I have some takes built up. Maltz, what are your thoughts? Or where can they find you?
The usual Sixers Mania, of course, on Instagram, PSF, Pro Sports Fans app. Check it out. It's on the App Store, Google Play, you name it. We're all over the place. Check out the Twitter as well, PSF.app.
All right. I'm not going to call it X like Sam did, but you can find me on all
social media. I don't want to, but it is, unfortunately. It's stupid.
It's Twitter. The fact that when you search for it online, it still is Twitter. Like the website is still Twitter. Anyway, find me on all social media platforms. Will Coffin, thank you for listening. And until next time, it was great to hear from everybody. Sixers going against some tougher teams coming up. It couldn't get much easier, but still should be wins. So that'll be all. Until next time.